PR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. As long as people from other countries have come to the Granite State, conflict has been part of the picture. Sometimes it's about newcomers versus longtime residents over issues of language or how the police are viewed or what's appropriate behavior in school, in the home, on the street. Sometimes the clashes are among immigrant groups themselves. For example, Rwandan, Hutu, and Tutsi refugees who arrived in New Hampshire in the 1990s after being on opposite sides of a civil war. And sometimes the clashes are within immigrant families, parents wanting to preserve their cultural traditions, and children aiming to be just like the other American kids. These family conflicts were explored in a recent theater piece called Dreaming Again, a play about New Hampshire immigration written by Genevieve Achill.
My children don't want the food I cook, the West Indian food.
We want pizza and cheese!
All the time I'm cooking and nobody's going to eat it?
Bring us to McDonald's!
Our friends go to McDonald's!
We are not them.
We want to go to McDonald's!
Your friend is the only child. I can't bring all six of you to McDonald's.
We want to go to McDonald's!
This is too hard. I don't know how to be in America.
Today in The Exchange, our series on New Hampshire's immigration story continues with culture clashes and how hard it can be sometimes to come together or at least find a balance that everyone's comfortable with. Let's hear from you. What cultural conflicts have you seen in the past or continue to experience today? How were these difficulties resolved or do they remain? What expectations seem fair to you when it comes to how different people live and behave in a new setting? And what seems unfair? Give us a call, The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. We have three guests joining us in studio is Salam Odi. She works as a medical and legal interpreter and translator throughout New Hampshire, Maine, and Massachusetts. Salam is a community activist, recently served two terms as a state commissioner on the status of women. She was born and raised in Jordan as a Palestinian refugee. And Salam, welcome back. Good to see you. Thanks for being
here. Good to see you, too. Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Captain Rick Riley. He's a captain with the Manchester Police Department. He's in charge of community policing, which, among other tasks, includes assisting immigrant and refugee families. And Captain Rick Riley, it's good to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Good to meet you, too. Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Stu Wallace. He's a New Hampshire historian and professor at the New Hampshire Technical Institute in Concord. And Stu, welcome back. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, and Stu, I'm sure you're going to remind us all hour. We've seen these conflicts again and again and again and again. Just remind us of some of those classic conflicts that you could fill volumes with on New Hampshire history.
Well, we've had in New Hampshire what I call a creeping immigration, in that we've had waves of immigrants, and each wave is a little bit different or more different than you might say than the core culture. We've had Irish and some Germans coming over around 1850. We've had large numbers of Franco-American families coming over, particularly after about 1875. Around 1895, 1900, large numbers of Southern Europeans, Eastern Europeans, some Central and also Scandinavians. And each one is a little bit different in that they came with different languages, different religious backgrounds. And then there's a bit of a gap in there where we had immigration restriction. But after World War II, again, we started to let the barriers down, primarily with refugees at first, and then later we simply got rid of national origins per se. And so we've had Irish, we've had Germans, we've had French, we've had and then any number of people from the old Austrian-Hungarian Empire, Russia, Poland, Greece, Italy, the Scandinavian countries. We actually, from 1880 to 1980 in New Hampshire, had a higher number of national, of foreign-born than the national average. We're not racially mixed, per se, but we have been ethnically mixed traditionally.
And each group coming, Stu, not exactly welcome with open arms.
No. We often wanted their labor, but we often didn't want them. And so we've had waves of nativism, per se, that is the discrimination against those who are not natives. And sometimes the harshest of natives are the ones who only two generations before themselves were not natives.
Some of the stories are amazing, and they'll probably come up this hour. But, Stu, I remember stories about people from Eastern Europe, for example, coming here at the time when we were all worried about Bolshevism and the rising Soviet state.
Right.
And those folks who were here in New Hampshire just trying to make a living really felt that.
Well, in 1919, 1920, we had the 12th highest number of Russians of any of the states. And in the so-called Red Scare of late 1919, 1920, we rounded up Russians simply because they were Russians. Rounded them up, hauled them off to eventually Deer Island, Boston, tried to actually deport numbers of them to Russia just because we were afraid of Bolshevism and the fact that they were going to spread this into the American workforce.
Well, and lots of stories like that that I know will come up throughout the hour. But I want to bring Captain Riley and Salam Odi into this, too. And, you know, Salam, we like to think that we've evolved and we've gotten beyond this history that Stu describes. But what do you think? How frequently, Salam, do you see cultural misunderstandings and even conflicts today?
I see it all the time, and it makes me sad. I think there is a lot of ignorance. There is tons and tons and tons of it. And whether it's in the medical field or the legal field or in schools, where I have four kids in four different schools, and as a translator, sometimes I get in and I try. My goal is to bridge the gap and bridge it with knowledge. And so the next time the patient comes in or the client comes in, you know, they are aware, or maybe the lawyer or the doctor or the nurse, you know. But I have to keep doing it, and I feel like, you know, come on, you know, there needs to be like in more information is spread. There need to be more seminars. They need to be more, you know, I feel like I know, like when I come in travel internationally, when I come through the airport, you know, there is like a special line or a special place for, you know, people who are, you know, entering the U.S. as, you know, not even immigrants, but as even like, you know, who don't have a citizenship, let's say that,
right.
You know. So non-citizens have their own, you know, spot. And I feel like when they go to get their either I-94 or whatever a process, they should be handed like a pamphlet that would explain, you know, some of the laws, just really the basic things, especially regarding like domestic violence. Because domestic violence, almost all over the world, it's almost okay, you know, except, you know, here in the U.S. And of course, it's not okay, but the way they don't make big deal of it. So a lot of people, when they come here, they end up in jail. They end up in jail, both sometimes men, sometimes women, and the family don't know what to do. And I just feel like there is so many things could be prevented, you know, had they, somebody had taught them or told them, listen, you can't do that. It's not allowed. If you do, that's what would happen. Or if you open a can of beer and walk in the street, I know where you come from. You can't do that, but you can't do that here. You will get arrested. It's
wow.
Not funny.
So basic laws and customs that people don't understand
would make a huge difference and would help out the police department, who extremely busy all the time. And I don't think they need those little teeny tiny things, you know. I just think more awareness will really minimize the amount of crimes, the amount of people who are going to jail, you know, just really more knowledge.
Well, and Captain Riley, before we get into what sorts of conflicts, misunderstandings, clashes you see, I'm just curious who you're working with today in terms of the immigrant and refugee families in Manchester.
Well, the refugee families measured back approximately 10 years, but the number that's generally used is about 3,300 refugees that have come through our health department in Manchester from 30 different countries. Right now, most of which are coming from Somalia and Sudan. There was a big influx of Bosnian refugees in the early 2000s. And more recently, the Bhutanese. And now Bhutanese are topping out the numbers in terms of how many folks that we're receiving in Manchester.
And it was so interesting to hear Salam talk about just some basic misunderstandings that get people into hot water. What are you seeing in terms of culture clashes, whether it's, you know, not understanding the laws or the customs, or whether it's newcomers saying, hey, that looks suspicious to me?
Okay, well, it starts out with education. Salam hit some of those points. That's a key piece. And what we've done at the Manchester Police Department through community policing is to engage these folks and to educate them about our customs and our laws to prevent issues from occurring within their neighborhoods and their communities. We have to understand that policing in their countries are generally not like policing in America. In many cases, they're being policed as opposed to being allowed to participate in policing. And that's the very that's the backbone of what community policing is all about. So it's not just immigrants and refugees that I promote at in Manchester. I do that with our, quote, Native Americans. All right, so that's very, very important to make them involved, to get them involved, give them avenues to contribute to policing in Manchester. There are a number of ways of doing that. We host a number of training programs for the refugee groups. We've identified leaders of those organizations in Manchester. They invite their families that they represent to the police department, and we talk about the issues that Salam had brought up. Domestic violence is very much one of those. The other one is parental rights. That is a major, major issue because children are assimilating a lot quicker in this community than are the parents.
Well, we heard that piece of sound in the beginning, the kids wanting to go to McDonald's and the mother saying, classic. Don't you want my West Indian food?
That was a fantastic opening, by the way, because that struck a lot of what I'm dealing with.
Quick question for you. What do you mean by sometimes people come from countries where they are policed, as you put it, and here it's different. The attitude toward police is very different.
Well, policing in America is more professional. We're better trained. We're not part of the military. And in other, that's a key piece, and not so much in this country, but in other countries, the police departments are more part of the military, and they are acting on behalf of the leadership in that country, and they will target populations based on ethnicity, religion, political viewpoints, and obviously that's not what we do in this country. And because of that, it has caused some serious issues with how people are being policed. And also, police are not well-paid and well-trained, and it leads to corruption and a variety of other issues. I mean, they are policing in communities where calories are currency, and that poses a big issue. And then the police in and of themselves are trying to take care of their families as well.
Have you ever been had someone from another country, a new arrival, you know, slip you a $20 bill to get off their back?
Not me,
since
personally.
That's what you do in other countries.
Yeah, exactly. We hear a lot about that, but that's part of the education piece. No, that has not happened to me, but I am aware of some officers who have encountered that, and that's an arrestable offense. So part of the education piece is to try to get to these folks quickly.
All right.
So we can prevent that kind of thing from happening.
Lots more to explore with all three of you, and we'll start taking your calls after a short break. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send us an email to exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
Good morning, it's 9:19. More of our series on New Hampshire's immigration story with culture classes on the exchange on NHPR at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, touchscreen devices, and very young children. New Hampshire weather today, mostly cloudy, some breaks of sunshine, chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms, highs today from 75 to 80 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the NEEF Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. From Chippers, caring for your trees, turf, garden, land, and forests, serving the Upper Valley, Kearsarge, and Lakes regions in Concord area, chippersinc.com. And from the New Hampshire Moose License Plate Program, supporting the Granite State's natural, historical, and cultural heritage, information online at mooseplate.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, our series on New Hampshire's immigration story continues with a look at some of the conflicts that come up over and over with every new group of people who arrive. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. What cultural conflicts have you seen in New Hampshire's past or continue to see today? What kind of expectations seem reasonable or fair to you when it comes to how different people live and behave in a new setting, and what seems unreasonable or unfair? Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. Also, The Exchange is now on Facebook, so we hope you go to our page and join the conversation there. And Stu Wallace, again, you're our historian this hour. Your history professor take on what we heard from Captain Riley and Salam Odi. Nothing new under the sun with these conflicts that they mentioned, or is there a new element to the type of conflicts we see today?
Maybe a new twist, but not necessarily a big difference. Problems with schools, major problem. What the French did was they brought their own schools down with them. They said, the heck with these public schools. And so by 1875, not only were the French priests, the Curés, coming down, but the sisters were coming down as well and starting up their own school system to get around that problem. Of course, that's what you can do when you're when you happen to be right next to another country.
Right. It's a little easier to come down.
Problems of authority were a problem because when you come to a new place, there are these people in uniform. In Ellis Island, for instance, all of the employees there were men in uniform, and you had immigrants coming from countries like Russia, parts of Poland, parts of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, where the guy in uniform was the bad guy. He was the guy you wanted to avoid. And what they would say to the immigrant was, well, if you have a question, go see the man in uniform. And that's the last person in the world they wanted to see. They would run the other way. And this is a problem when they came to the cities in New Hampshire, because you had a police force that probably represented a previous generation of refugees. And so, and they often didn't like the refugee.
The newcomer.
They didn't like the refugee or the newcomer or whatever. And so that was problematic as well, in that the people who were the enforcers were often part of the community that didn't really like the immigrant coming in.
Interesting. So issues in schools and law enforcement, just like Captain Riley and Salam Odi said.
You also have the situation of a different culture coming in, trying to adjust, and you have stereotypes of the culture coming in. For instance, Italians who came here were often brought in as stonecutters, and they just assumed they were kind of a lower class of stonecutters. They shipped them in by boxcar very often to do the hard work to build foundations and then quickly move them on to something else. The Italians adjusted very nicely. After a few miserable winters in the quarries, they said, we don't want to be stonecutters anymore.
Wow.
And in a place like Concord, they got into food distribution. So by 1950, all the little grocery stores in Concord had an Italian name, except for one auto dealer who decided that Rocco Grapponi decided he would move away from food and stonecutting and sell cars. And so you have the way that you have to, a dynamic here of what's in the community in place and how it isn't always receptive to the immigrant, and you have the immigrant making the adjustment.
Well, and that's really interesting, and again, so relevant to what our other guests said. And, you know, we should note, before we go much further, that many of New Hampshire's immigrants today are highly skilled professionals working in technology, in healthcare. Many likely don't face some of these issues, at least to a large extent. In fact, some of them were likely asked to come because of their particular technical expertise. But I want to pick up on something Stu Wallace said about stereotypes. And to you first, Salam, how often do you see these cultural clashes coming up based just on stereotypes before somebody even opens their mouth?
I know, and I see it like, you know, people tend to judge because of ignorance. You know, they tend to judge, let's say, those women just because they are wearing the veil or because guys are wearing, you know, some kind of like, you know, the robe. But, you know, they get judged. Or sometimes, like, you know, I have seen complaints where because women would carry their babies on their back, you see the Somalian women and how they wrap their babies around their back. And, you know, some people had called 911 thinking that, you know, those women are gonna, you know, the babies are gonna drop and, you know, they're not doing this right. And so I feel like, and though, you know, and actually maybe this is one of the best way to tuck your, how they tuck their babies in, you know, but the babies are happy. They're riding mommy's back and mommy's, and you know, she's carrying lots of groceries and she's walking. She doesn't drive. She doesn't have a car. So, you know, they get their groceries like from Stop and Shop, let's say on Valley Street, where a lot of refugees live in that neighborhood, and they walk back to their homes. You know, some Americans panic and they think, what's the heck is going on? Yeah.
Calling 911 because somebody's carrying a baby wrapped on their back in
and
typical
carrying,
African fashion.
Yeah, they're carrying, you know, groceries, and they're thinking like, you know, this is perhaps, you know, they're endangering the baby. Or so, you know, I feel like ignorance, really, and we sometimes choose to be ignorant and we just don't want to find out. We don't want to know. We don't want to ask. And I feel a lot of those refugees, if we just start, even, or, you know, new immigrants, if we start asking them questions, they would be happy to answer. You know, they just have a different way of living. You know, it's not dangerous, or it could be sometimes dangerous, but, you know, they're so used to doing things in their homeland just so differently than we do things here.
I wonder how you feel, again, helping people with these conflicts today, when you hear Stu talk about, we've been through this before, eventually we work it out. I mean, today, thinking about Italians or French as someone you want to discriminate against seems crazy. How does that make you feel as someone who's sort of in the boiling pot today?
Well, I have been in the boiling pot since I have arrived 20 years ago, and I came here when I was 17 years old. So, you know, I love New Hampshire, and I love the country, and so that's one of the reasons where I am active. But I also, you know, I also want to say that I felt less fortunate as an immigrant. So when I ran to a legal issue or a legal problem, I felt like my problem was being ignored, not dealt with the way that if I was not, you know, if I was like American descent, it would have been dealt with differently, because I see that all the time. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, it hurts. Really, it hurts a lot. Recently, my son was attacked. He goes to Memorial High School, and he was attacked the March 8th by two other kids who are older than him. And simply, they just don't like him. But anyways, the two children were expelled, that the other kids, from school. And I know the principal is working on it, but I felt like nobody ever did contact me from the police department to follow up on what's going on with him. He had a concussion.
Wow.
His teeth moved out of place. I mean, I've been with him, neurologist, all over the place, trying to. He's been missing so much school. He's on heavy medication for depression just because of what had happened to him. But I feel like, you know, come on, you know, honest. To me, I feel less fortunate. I feel like, you know, I wish sometimes my name was, you know, Janet, or, you know what I'm
Jane
saying?
Smith.
Whatever, you know, just kind of like, I want to be able to, you know, this is not equal. I don't feel like an equal treatment. All the troubles that I had to deal with my previous marriage and the legal issues of it, you know, I did not feel like I did get fair treatment. And that's simply, I don't know, is it because they're assuming my background, it's okay because my background, it's perhaps, it's not the best, you know what I'm saying? I don't know. I think we need to find some answers, and we need to really bridge that gap with some knowledge, and we can get rid of that.
Well, and since you touched on stereotypes, and Stu did too, what about you, Captain Riley? I wonder, sometimes when your officers come to this work of community policing, are there certain stereotypes that they have to kind of put on the shelf so that they can do this work effectively?
Yeah, stereotyping goes both ways. People have, you know, they have some opinions of us when they see us in uniform. Stu talked a little bit about the uniform and what it meant in their country. We have to do a number of things to try to alleviate that. And by doing that, again, is education and to get to our refugees as soon as possible to dispel some of those stereotypes they have of us. We do that through a variety of means, through the health department, welcoming programming, the International Institute. We host training programs for refugees at the police department, and that's a very important piece. Even if they don't take anything out of the training, I want them to come to the police department and understand that this is their police department, and they know where it is, and they feel comfortable going there. And when they come to the police department, they're not just at the front counter. They're invited in. They go upstairs to administration, and they go into the roll call and training rooms where they have their program. So that's an important piece to make them comfortable with that. That's the first step. And we also do a lot of diversity training within the police department. Every employee has diversity training.
Can you give us just a short example of what that's like, diversity training?
Well, diversity training, first of all, is 24/7. I mean, that's constant.
It's not a class that you attend and you graduate and you're done.
Well, we do have that programming within our recruit academy, and also for all new hires, everything from our janitors to our chief goes through cultural diversity training. And because I work in community policing, my offices now and then will go to formal training. But you don't want to leave that training at the door. It's a constant experience. And some of the things that Salam had brought up, some of the issues that she had brought up, our offices, by working in Manchester in a diverse community, learn from that. And they have an understanding when they see that woman carrying that child on her back. All right, they have an understanding of what that is. The citizens may not. The citizens who make the call may not understand that, but the officers do. And that takes time. It takes time in an emerging and changing community, which is what Manchester is.
Right. It's always emerging and changing. You mentioned the new groups that keep coming in, including the most recent, the Bhutanese.
Yes. And for that reason, that's why the training never stops, you know, never stops.
Well, I want to pick up on something that Salam talked about, and we've all mentioned the schools. Joining us now on the phone is Amadou Hamadi. He's a social worker in the Manchester school system, coordinator of the Refugee School Impact Program, administered by the International Institute. And Amadou Hamadi, good to have you. Welcome back to The Exchange.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, first of all, Amadou, who are you working with today in the Manchester schools? Just give us a sense of who is who's part of this program, who you're trying to help out there.
Yeah, we mostly work with the refugees who's been here 3 years and less, and they're mostly Bhutanese refugees and Iraqis and some few refugees from Africa, like Congo and Tanzania.
And Amadou, what would you say are some of the common problems that come up when a child from a very different culture comes to an American public school?
Yeah, first of all, I would like to thank Chief all your guests, and especially Chief Rally, for the work he's doing in the community, trying to help all our refugees to really to understand the law and the customs, so they can adjust well in the city of Manchester. To go back to your question, I will try to frame it in a more cultural perspective. Because, as you know, many communities I work with are coming from a family that are mostly characterized by a sense of unity based on cultural values. And, Laura, in many of these communities, the family roles are well defined. Father usually is at the top of the hierarchy and is responsible for providing security. And when these families really come here to the United States, this family structure is most of the time shaken, and a lot of conflict emerge. And since you're talking about, I think all you guests have touched on many of these cultural clashes. But what we've seen, even though there is a generational conflict among many cultures, but what is really specific, special about this conflict that with the refugees is really worsened and distorted by their experience coming to the country. There is kind of what we've seen in the school, working with these kids and the parents. We've seen this kind of ongoing polarization of attitude with many parents, still looking toward their countries of origin as home. And also attempting really to enforce traditional values in a totally new situation.
Now, Amadou, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but this is really interesting. So some of the conflicts you see isn't with, the school trying to understand the student and the student not being sure how to act or what to do in school, but within the family itself.
Exactly.
As they all adjust to their new situation in very different ways.
It's a very different way. And the kids are sometimes, countering that attitude that parents have with sometimes a very obsessive assimilation because they want to strive to adapt to a new culture and to fit in.
I've heard some parents, some newcomer parents, refugee and immigrant parents complain that American schools are trying to Americanize their kids and, take away from those cherished cultural values, that the parents have concerns there about the impact of the schools on their kids' values.
Exactly. I spoke to some of the parents who are telling me that they're receiving a lot of parenting classes that have providing them a lot of good parenting skills, but they feel like these parenting classes have not really addressed their struggle as an immigrant parent, because this is really a unique challenge that they face. Because as I said, they find themselves. Children sometimes find themselves interpreting the society, the school policies and expectations for their parents, while, this reversal of family power dynamic poses its own challenges.
The power dynamic changes because the kids learn the language faster and become accustomed faster.
Yeah.
I'm also wondering, Amadou, we heard a terrible story from Salam about one of her children suffering at the school, being attacked by two other students. How much of the conflicts or difficulties that you work through, Amadou, have to do with the American students being unwelcoming, to say the least. Does that come up a lot or a little?
This does come a lot. I'm not aware of that case specifically, but again, kids, there's always that conflict. Kids feeling like they kind of not welcomed by their American peers, or they feel like they are called names and all this. This is going is still going on all the time. But what I'm more aware is more of what the parents are really telling me, what the difficulties they're having to discipline their kids, for example. Because I think the discipline issue, that's really the issue that I wanted to talk about.
Parents feeling like they can't discipline their kids, that they're becoming unruly in this new country.
Yeah, they keep it unruly. You know, I remember when I was a kid, you know, my parents used to hit me, but he just decided to put me on the right track. But when many of these immigrants who come here, you know, they come from part of the world where corporal punishment sometimes is more accepted than it is here in the United States.
Right, and I think one of our guests mentioned that. One more question for you, Amadou, if I could. What about the role of the teacher? What different views do you find about what the teacher's appropriate role is, and how does that affect the way teachers approach their new students from other countries?
The role of the teacher, from where they're coming from, or the over here?
What I'm saying is, do some children arrive with a different idea of what the role of the teacher is?
Yeah, it is. You know, again, many children communities we work from, they come from culture where really they originated where they have educational system where really teachers and educators are seen as leaders. They are not to be questioned and challenged. And you know, this class, they used to this kind of, they used to classroom where it's structured so that the method of learning is usually memorization and all that. But parents, you know, also are not involved in their kids' education because they believe, you know, teachers have the, you know, the responsibility to educate the.
Expectation of parent involvement isn't part of their cultural understanding.
Exactly, part of their cultural understanding.
Yeah, and interesting to hear you say, you know, some kids come in thinking, well, the teacher's the authority, so I'm not supposed to ask questions, and I'm sure that's a problem, too.
Exactly.
Well, Amadou, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate
You're
it.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
That's Amadou Hamidi. He's a social worker in the Manchester school system and coordinator of the Refugee School Impact Program administered by the International Institute. Now, all of you, after a short break, I do want to get your thoughts on what has happened in the schools as new kids come in from elsewhere and trying to adjust. We'll also start taking your calls, too, so join us at 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Join us with your questions, comments, and personal experiences about some of the cultural conflicts that we see today and in New Hampshire's past. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
It's been called Europe's San Francisco. Though a large city, Lisbon has a small town feel with a different neighborhood around every corner. Our final drawing during NHPR's Merry Month of May is a trip to the Portuguese capital. The package includes airfare for two and 6 nights lodging in one of Europe's oldest cities, courtesy of Azores Express SATA Airlines. Getting in on the drawing is as easy as supporting your favorite news service. Visit nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Dralian from Cirque du Soleil, coming to Manchester with a fusion of East and West. Opens May 30th at Verizon Wireless Arena. Tickets at cirquedusoleil.com. And Antioch University, New England and Keene, offering 7 different master's and doctoral programs in environmental studies. Information at antiochne.edu. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, it's the return of the Socrates Exchange, as we examine the question, who is American? Part of our exploration of New Hampshire's immigration story. Join us tomorrow morning live at 9 for that. Today, culture clashes, conflicts that arise as immigrants and refugees settle into life in America. Join us with your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. What cultural conflicts have you seen in New Hampshire's past or continue to see today? What kinds of expectations seem reasonable to you when it comes to adjusting to a new setting? What seems unfair or unreasonable? Where could people use a little more help adapting? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Captain Riley, Stu Wallace, Salam Odi, real interesting stuff from Amadou Hamadi, working with refugees in the Manchester school system. Before we go to our listeners, I'd love all of your thoughts. And Salam, I think starting with you, one of the things that he kept reiterating was a lot of the conflicts that you're seeing in schools actually start in the home as kids become acculturated more quickly.
Yes, absolutely. And that is so true. And that's due to the fact that children do emerge, play with other children, and their minds are still fresh, you know. And they're still young. They learn the language fast. And they just want to be like everybody else. And, of course, the parents, they don't want to be like everybody else. They try to hold so hard on their culture because their hope is maybe when the war does calm down, at one point they want to go back. And I have seen so many of them who had gone back, actually.
Really?
Really. And I think that then there is a conflict between children and parents. So when that conflict does develop, I find myself in the courthouse where children get to be taken away from their parents because the parents try to discipline the children and they spank them or hit them. And then I have at least six cases that I am working on where this is the case.
That's interesting. Amadou mentioned that too, that in many families that he works with, corporal punishment is fine. In this country, we have different views.
Absolutely. And also, you know, when I mentioned that teachers, the teacher role.
The role of the teachers, how they're viewed.
I think I mean, going to school, part of my, you know, higher education, I have done it here, but it was with the professors. But watching my children with their teachers, it's completely different than myself with my teachers when I was in middle school and high school. In middle school and even in elementary school, I mean, the teacher has the first word and the last word.
This is growing up in Jordan.
Absolutely, yes. And even the teacher even has a stick in her hand all the time. And if you don't do your homework or if you hadn't done, open up your hand and you will get smacked four times or six times. It depends on how many questions you missed out on. Now, our parents don't get mad. They think she's a great teacher because she's doing her job. You know, her job is to make sure you are doing your schoolwork. Because when I go home, my mother doesn't want to see me with my book wide open unless it's finals, you know. Otherwise, she expects me to be finished with my homework. So when I get home, I need to do laundry and clean and do all the other things. Which
so
is
homework is a
yeah
a problem. Sometimes.
Absolutely, it is a problem, and I think that's why a lot of children, refugee children, end up where you know the parents. Not, I mean, the language barrier. It's a huge problem, but also the way parents are even, you know, the way the kids used to, which is finishing everything in school. Don't bring anything home. So we take our textbook home and we, you know, we do all the quizzes at home. You know, we don't do it at home, but we do it in a school all the time.
That's really interesting. That's a big difference.
It's a tremendous difference. And this is actually, I mean, I like it that way rather than, you know, bring everything and do the projects. I mean, I do understand, but sometimes like 4 and 5 projects in like a couple of weeks, come on, that's a lot. So I feel like sometimes the children, or at least my children feel like, you know, they're dumping all the work on us, Mom.
Well, I hear that all the
time, too. They complain. But I think, again, really, just a bit more education, and it should be like maybe should be mandatory. Like maybe we need to do something where it's mandatory. You know, it's not like by choice. Like we need to educate, but should be like mandatory that for them to attend, so on and so forth. And it would be the only way that we can install those, not to make them Americanized. I know they feel like we're trying to Americanize them, and I know this is not the goal of our schools, But sometimes the schools, like some of the principals had said to me, well, we have like 1,200 kids. We cannot focus on, you know, 20 kids and leave the other one. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So they find themselves a struggle and they cannot afford to make time for the minorities, you know?
Well, and Stu, if you could take off your history hat and just be a professor for us. Now, again, you teach history at New Hampshire Technical Institute. What sorts of issues come up for you as a professor when it comes to kids, older, you know, young adults in your case, coming to the New Hampshire Technical Institute?
Well, we have students from over 50 countries there, and they're from all over the place, Asia, Africa, Latin America. And I've had a variety of interesting experiences. In fact, I find it fun to have the student from somewhere else, because it teaches me more than probably I'm teaching them. But I had, for example, one student who was continually late to class, continually late to appointments, and I was ready to unload on him because we're a very time-oriented, punctual society. He came from a society where punctuality was not a virtue at all. And so I couldn't unload on him for that. I just had to basically say, this is the way we do it here, and try to be on time next time. I had another wonderful student. I foolishly, in my early days, said, if anyone here has a language issue, if it is English your second language, you want to come talk to me afterwards. And so several of them actually came up and said, yeah, I had trouble with the reading or the lecture or whatever. And I assigned an essay. And one woman called me up at home. She said, I'm an Arab who was raised in Israel. English is my third language. I didn't speak to you about that. And I said, okay, well, we're going to forget the second language thing. We sometimes don't realize that people from other countries have several languages.
Exactly.
And so that was an issue. We traditionally have always had this thing about, and this goes back to Teddy Roosevelt saying, getting rid of the hyphenated American and taking that next generation and turning them into Americans per se. But what we have to do as teachers is try to bridge the gap, not say you will become an American, but take their culture and work it into ours. And it's in little tiny ways. One student I had, she was Vietnamese, and I asked her a question. What was the thrust of so-and-so's argument? She learned our language very literally. Thrust to her meant a sword thrust. And she couldn't answer the question. What does a sword thrust have to do with anything? And it was a simple case where I wasn't sensitive to her attempts to basically deal with a language issue, which is a killer.
Well, you could have used Salam's interpretation services at that point, I think. And I want to invite our listeners again to join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at some of the culture clashes that have happened over New Hampshire's immigration history, including many that continue today. The number for you to join us with your questions, comments, and personal experiences is 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, there's one more area that I want to explore with you in the limited time that remains. And Captain Riley, you know, we've talked about conflicts within families, and Salam talked a lot about that, as did Amadou Hamadi. We've talked about conflicts between newcomers and long-timers. Do you see some conflicts, Captain Riley, within immigrant communities or refugee communities themselves?
Not as much as would be expected. When you hear about what happened in our countries of origin, it's important for us to have an understanding of what happened in Somalia and Sudan and Iraq, which we're all very much aware of, to understand where they're coming from. Are there competing forces there that are being relocated here? I haven't seen anything to that extent. What we do see more of is, again, what carrying on the discussion that we've had about the families. Just to take it another step, we've talked about the tensions between the children and the parents. Children are being told, welcome to America, you're free to do whatever you want. When mom puts in a curfew of 9 o'clock and the youngster comes in at 11 o'clock and the youngster says, I don't care what time it is, mom, I'm in America now, I'm going to do whatever I want.
Well, actually, I get that from my 8-year-old, too.
Oh,
it's a free country, and I say, not until you're 18, Buster.
Yeah. Now, you bring up an interesting point there, too, because there's some of the culture, the clash between the parents and the child. But you bring up an interesting point with your comment, is that I'm finding that a lot of tensions within refugee families are the same, and families of those who have, those of us who have lived here all along.
So how do you deal with that? You know, if you get a report, Captain Riley, that, you know, some parent is, you know, beating and abusing their child, but for that parent, it's just, look, this is the way it's done. We need to keep these kids in line. How do you talk to that parent and say, look, you can't do that here? Parents, you know, any parent, no matter where they're from, takes offense at being told how to parent. That's okay. A very touchy issue.
It's a very touchy issue, even, again, amongst our native population, you know.
Right.
Again, it's through education. I mean, parental rights is huge amongst these families. They want to know what their limits are. How far can they go? And it's very important. When I talk to the immigrant leaders in the community, immigrant and refugee leaders in the community, hey, what program are you in need of? And always, parental rights and responsibilities is at the forefront. We educate our juvenile investigators, okay, to cope with those kinds of issues. I've done that. I had that assignment for a long, long time in the 80s and 90s. I did not encounter these kinds of things, although I have to a small extent. But it's very important to educate both sides, not only the refugees themselves, but the investigators who are ultimately going to be participating in this. And also, to take it another level, I've just been told that there's an emerging concern that a lot of the women are assimilating or adapting to this culture quicker than the men are. And that, especially amongst our African population, is causing some tension within families.
Absolutely.
That's really interesting. And Salam, I want to ask you about that. And Amadou mentioned that, too. He said, you know, in many of the families he works with, the family structure is quite clear. Dad is at the top of the heap. That's very interesting what you mentioned, Captain Riley. What do you think, Salam?
Yeah, I think that that is so true. And, you know, women find themselves, you know, having jobs, even if it's in a factory and doing the grocery shopping. And, you know, like they are out in the public more than they would be back in their home countries. Like if I was back in my home country, I would not be doing all those things. I would not be as active. It would not be expected or even accepted that I am that active. I am all over the place. I can't do anything. You know what I'm saying? So this is an issue. So men find that an issue. My ex-husband found it an issue, and he fought with me over and over again, and he keeps reminding me that I am an Arab and I am a Muslim and I should not be, you know, volunteering to do this and this and that, and it's like, no, you should be at home and cook, and I do love to cook, and I feed my children and I feed everybody as a matter of fact. But I believed, you know, I had more. You know, I could give more, and I wanted to make the best example for my children.
Now, that's really interesting. So you're a living, breathing example of exactly what Captain Riley talks about.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, he even did fight with me when I did enroll my kids in City Year program. So all my kids were City Year leaders, and they were very involved for so many years, and they continue to be, and I'm so proud of them. What I'm saying is we all need to contribute. We need, even those refugees who come in, we need to show them that they can be involved. Because you know what? Sadly, so many of them turn to drugs and turn to alcohol. And that's been a tremendous issue. That's been a huge issue. I see it when I'm in juvenile courts. I see it, and it really breaks my heart. And they just like, oh, we can't. And they end up being either deported or with the CS prisons. And I think that's really sad. But I think, again, there is a lot of work to be done. And I think we need to find the right people who can help. I know sometimes, you know, the police department or myself or other people trying to approach the correct people. But lots of times these are not the correct people, you know, that we are approaching to spread the word out there. You know, whether it's education, whether what's right, what's wrong. Again, with a little bit of education, honest to God, we can prevent lots of these issues. I believe that strongly.
That's a message that I'm definitely getting from you and Captain Riley today. And let's take a call if we could. Peter's calling in from Manchester. Hi, Peter. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I actually work with your sister in Manchester quite a bit. We work in a community in Manchester. And, I mean, your last speaker is right on when she's talking about children kind of growing up and falling into, you know, drugs or just the literacy levels. But I'm finding that the biggest issue is just coming into our system and our processes is so overwhelming for a lot of families. We were doing pre-registration for preschool yesterday, and I continued to turn the page to the next page and the next page and the next page, which all had the same information needed. And a woman asked me, she's like, why do you need all this for me?
All that, so very overwhelming. And boy, that's a good word to use. I can imagine, Stu, that in the past and even today, it is overwhelming. And some of these misunderstandings probably happen because people, not only language barriers, but they're just overwhelmed by all that's required to function in this society.
Well, it's a two-way street. First of all, our perception of immigrants tends to be based on what we see in the news. And that's bad right there. What we see of Africa or the Middle East or Asia is not really what their society all about. And so there's a stereotype that's already in place. And when they get here, very often they are told that the world of their parents, the children are told the world of their parents is something that they've escaped from, they don't want it, and now to take in this, it's almost devalued. And for consciously for a while, both in New Hampshire and in the country as a whole, we tended to devalue the old world, which is just driving the younger generation to get further and further away from their parents. And that's a problem. One thing that NHTI has done recently is they've taken CJA criminal justice students and they've teamed them up with immigrants coming into the school. And so they have a buddy system where the CJA student, the criminal justice student, is actually working with an immigrant. And this is a good way for them to get a new perspective on something they probably didn't have when they came there.
Wow, person by person. And all of you have talked about the need for just education. I know, Salam, you keep saying that, you know, and Captain Riley, for sure. Just to wrap up with all of you, what do you think, Captain Riley? What further efforts are you going to be making or thinking about as you keep trying to, you can never reduce eliminate conflict, but at least reduce it?
Well, the most important thing is communication, and it's not good enough that you speak with somebody 1 week and then you don't talk to them again for several months. It has to be sustained communication, and that goes with every part of my business. And the important message is, too, is to recognize that we're not trying to interfere with their sustaining their culture. We want them to sustain their culture. And in that sense, I'm uncomfortable with the word assimilate, but helping them adapt, that's the most appropriate thing that we can do, the best service that we can provide all of these folks.
All right. And last quick thoughts from you, Salam, on this forward-looking.
I want to say that I want to offer my services to the Manchester Police Department for free of charge. If you ever need me for anything, to explain anything, to run any workshop for you, I'll be more than happy to do that. My goal is to really kill that ignorance and just put it somewhere where it doesn't come out again, just so we can all be on the same page and be, you know, not feeling, you know, being discriminated against. Let's just work together. And I know we can do it. It's not impossible.
Well, it was great having all three of you here. Salam, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Salam Odi, again, she's a medical and legal interpreter and translator throughout New Hampshire, Maine, and Massachusetts. Captain Riley, nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Captain Rick Riley, a captain with the Manchester Police Department in charge of community policing. And Stu Wallace, always a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Stu Wallace, New Hampshire historian professor at NHTI. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. Our series on New Hampshire's immigration story is made possible by the New Hampshire Humanities Council. Our executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.